In one. Hello, guys. Welcome back to the Rugby Journey. Insane times. 2024. Happy New Year to anyone watching. Hope you all had a very festive Christmas. Awesome New Year. Just like me, writing down goals, smashing them out. Number one goal, get the biggest, scariest, high-profile person I can find in the area to jump on my podcast. Everyone, welcome. Tafu Pilota now. Taf.
Hello.
Mate, thank you for coming on, my friend.
No, thanks for having me, Nick. I mean, not too sure about scary, but hey, whatever floats your boat.
I should have said good looking, man. That's my fault.
It's all good. I'll forgive you for that one.
Thanks, mate. I'm terrified. Send help. Mate, look, obviously, for anyone who doesn't know Taf, we have a lot of fans overseas, so a few in Japan, a few in America and in Canada, stuff like that. Most of the fans are obviously here in New South Wales and in Queensland and stuff like that. But for anyone who doesn't know, and I like to talk a lot of time sort of to the people who are novice, right, and who don't know a lot about rugby, maybe the league guys. But this guy right here, probably the best hooker we've had in the last 20 years in Australian rugby. I mean, that's...
Oh, shucks.
No, mate. It's that same, mate. 2012, you won the Matt Burke Cup at New South Wales Rugby. You were the best player in New South Wales. Best player probably in the world at that time. But, I mean, hey, you know, I mean, I'm not just saying that because he's on the podcast, guys, okay?
It's very flattering. No, cheers, Nick. No.
Mate, you got a very interesting story. So, obviously, a kid from out west, you're the famous kid from out west who made it as a Wallaby and as Waratah. And now we see the likes of Sonny Bill on Stan, I think just after the World Cup or during the World Cup, he said, hey, we need to go out west more and find talent. My argument is talent's actually already there. They're just not looking very hard. But you've got that story. Mate, so let's start off with a question I ask everybody on the Rugby Journey podcast, which is tell us about your rugby journey, sort of how you got started and what made you, say, choose rugby over rugby league?
Yeah, great question. I actually didn't start rugby till I was 16, where a teacher from Wollongong transferred to our school just as most teachers do. They look for opportunities. Very rugby mad. Played a lot of his club rugby at West Harbour. Oh, yeah. And, spotted us out at our school. Tuesday afternoon sport was taken away because most kids were truanting. however, I spent most of my time in the library. So.
Hey, there you go. See? Well, smart fella.
I mean, I wasn't the most well-behaved kid. I was setting up... infrastructures and networks, you know.
Yeah, as you do.
Yeah,
as you do.
And sending those cathode ray tubes to classes that need to learn via video. So, this teacher just said, hey, looks like you guys play rugby. And we were like,
oh, Jesus,
what on earth is that?
Tell
you. No, yeah. Well, I mean, fair question. So he sat us down and made us watch like Bledisloe tests.
Oh, yeah, yeah, yep.
Yeah, we're like, oh, this looks quite easy. People stacking on each other.
Yep.
Giving each other wedgies on the sideline.
Sounds like the sport for me.
Yeah, headbutting galore. So,
yep.
He actually signed us up to go to a trial. However, he did it quite deviously by making us go to the Powerhouse Museum.
Oh, yes, yes, very nice.
But it said along the way, we just got to make a quick stop. Bring your cleats because it's artificial turf.
Yep, yeah.
And then next minute we're participating in a trial. Suffice to say, pretty happy that he made us do it because from that year progressed quite quickly, really, almost all the way to Australian Schoolboys in 2001.
Yep. Yep.
But the following years made it to Australian Schoolboys in 2003.
Yep.
Fortunate enough to be picked up by the Brumbies later on. But during that time in 2001, the teacher also told us to join a rugby club. Simply because it's not enough to play the position you're in. You need to understand other positions as well.
So
I joined Maryland's Junior Wolves.
Yep.
Shout out to the Wolves.
Yep, to the Wolves.
And, basically I applied to play forward as well because I played flanker in high school.
Oh, yeah, okay.
However, all the positions in the forwards were taken. So guess what? I had to play fly half.
Oh, let's go. Beautiful.
Needless to say, I was the smallest kid there.
Yeah.
But it was probably one of the best experiences I've ever had because it actually, you know, that sort of stigma falls to a lot of the work, backs to nothing.
Yeah.
I stay true to that. Yeah. Because we literally had three moves. It was an inside switch, a double inside switch, and a triple inside switch with our winger. Mind you, these are real big backs. So it wasn't hard to get them going forward.
Give it to them early, let them go.
Exactly. Yeah. And fortunate enough, we went through undefeated.
I would imagine so. Yeah, exactly.
There's this kid named Michael Daff who was the opposite fly half who played for, what's that team in Eastwood? Beecroft.
The Beecroft, yep. There's a lot of teams in Eastwood.
A very hard hitting 10, might I add. Yep. Like, I've received quite a few hits from him. And he was saying, what on earth are you doing playing in the backs? Yeah. I'm like, hey, beats me, but I'm loving it.
I was just told to stay here. Yeah, exactly.
But I guess from that experience, what I realized was coming up in an area where league is so dominant, the scarcity of rugby as a sport was prominent because obviously we had no idea, so who would?
Exactly right. And I guess when you're in that situation and, you know, obviously we've met at TARS when I was a DO and later Tarman. Sorry to reveal the mask, guys. That, you know, Tarman's not actually...
Hey, good looking Tarman.
Oh, mate, stop it. It's all the mask, actually.
No, not all.
But, you know, we would do clinics and I noticed that with New South Wales Rugby and, you know, this is not... I don't want to necessarily blame anyone, but, you know, a lot of where we were going for... junior rugby clinics or senior rugby clinics was eastern suburbs and North Shore, right? There was no real attempt to go out west. I'm from Epping Boys High, so that's my old school. And even I try to say, hey, look, you know, they actually play rugby there. We've, you know, Ed Craig, who played for the Waratahs a couple of games and played schoolboys and stuff like that, played 20s. I said, he's in my year. We have a rugby guy who's, you know, that's him. Like, we should be promoting it here. You know, even if we just play sevens, anything, let's just get people there. They're keen to receive the information. Let's just go.
Absolutely.
We're not quite sure that's what they want, or we can't do it. There's always a, you know, an asterisk or a but, or, you know, something's going on. And I'm just like, see, this is the problem. And I believe truly that in rugby league, and this is obviously from the outside looking in because I'm a rugby guy, as we all know, but in rugby league, they go, right, if you come to play, you come to play for the club, if you're the best on park, we'll play you, right? And rugby seems to have that, okay, well, what school did you go to? Did you play 20s? Did you play schoolboys? You know, have you been in the system?
And yeah.
Even at junior footy, I played at Hunters Hill, and I remember, you know, I was a fairly okay tight head prop. Back in the day, very tall, tight head prop as well, I might add. But very, you know, I love food, mate. So what are you going to do?
Don't we all?
This is what I'm trying to say, right?
Yeah.
And we get there, and I remember I made selections for Norse, but the Norse coach has said, oh, well, these guys have been playing with each other since they were 8. So
yeah.
It's and you receive that at 10 or 12 or 15, and you just go, why am I still playing the sport? Why am I still here? I've earned the right. I've done everything I can. I've scoring tries every game as a tight end prop, which I shouldn't be, and popping everyone in scrums.
Yeah.
And, well, you can't play because I coach Mossman. These guys have been playing since they were 8. That's not an excuse to not pick someone. You know what I mean? You put that on rugby league or AFL or soccer or whatever, and based on merit, you play, right? So... have you experienced that, obviously as a professional athlete, have you experienced that at the high level or at a low level? Have you noticed in comparison to other people you talk to in other sports that's apparent here in rugby?
Let me give you one perfect example of this.
Please.
Dave Dennis.
Yes.
East Currajong boy.
Yes.
Played against him in the 16s, although he was playing a year up.
Right.
The fact that he was in 2001, where we played the Sydney competition, he was the only one from both Penrith and Parramatta to qualify for the Sydney team.
Wow.
Yes.
Wow.
And unfortunately for him, rather than getting more development from Penrith, he had to leave Penrith and go join the likes of Sydney Uni.
Yeah.
Whether or not it was by lucrative offer, beats the point.
Yeah.
It just it's just a shame that kids can't develop where they grow up.
Yeah.
And that they have to go to the better known clubs just to develop.
Absolutely.
I still recall the first game. We smashed Penrith 63-7. Yet he was sticking out like a sore thumb simply because he was making line breaks left, front and centre.
Yeah.
But good on him for taking the opportunity to further his game.
Yep.
Now, reason why I say this is because I wanted to have the same approach as why do I need to leave my club team to prove that I'm not better, not lesser, but I can play the game.
Yeah, yeah.
Because we always get that, as you highlighted, the stereotype of, oh, well, it's favoritism. And yeah, if any person knows me, I'm always one to rub against the grain.
Yeah, yeah, so, for sure.
And that's where I just set my journey to say, right, I'm going to prove these haters wrong.
Yep.
But stick to my guns because at the end of the day, I've been educated about the game of rugby.
Yep.
What else can I educate myself about it to not just help myself but people within my community, my larger family as well, to say that, hey, anyone can make this sport. It's just you've got to take the opportunity with both hands to see it as a positive when people give you negative feedback. So reason why I bring up Dave is because he's one of many, but he is most prominent in the sense that it was like the worst case scenario you could ever give to a kid.
Yeah, exactly. And as you've said, one of many, you see a massive trend now where people are going from, I mean, the big examples, obviously guys like Nems, Namani Nadolo, and when he first came in, played for Ramwick, I believe, and did a sort Manly. Of a stint out there, Manly. And then you look at guys like Kirtley Beal, who's obviously a Mount Druitt boy, and then went to Joey's and played for Norse, and then played for Ramwick and played for East.
Yep.
Probably play for Southern Districts and every other club because that's KB, you know. We love KB.
More clubs than Tiger Woods.
What? That's exactly. Exactly. And then, you know, guys like – and then you have the league converts come over, like Israel Folau, who is obviously a West boy as well.
Yeah, Minto.
Yeah, and then, you know, he ends up signing for Sydney Uni as well. And Sydney Uni, obviously that sort of 2000s to – 2015 range, let's say, were the, you know, if you wanted to go somewhere to develop to get to the next level, you went to Sydney Uni or you went to Ramwick or something like that. But most of the players came from out west, right? So
correct.
You put one and two together, you look at it from the outside, you go, well, hang on, we've still got Penrith, we've still got Parramatta, but these people are leaving.
Do we have Penrith?
Penrith, I believe, had... I think as of this year, they're leaving the Jono Dent. So I'm not sure if they're... Yeah. Playing subbies or what they're doing. I'm not in the inner circle.
No, same.
So
because, well, my club Parramatta got renamed
Western Sydney.
Too.
Yeah, yeah, exactly.
Simply because Penrith was no longer in the competition.
Yeah.
So therefore, here we are as a club representing the whole Western catchment.
Yeah. Yeah.
Both north and south.
Exactly.
As north as where is it? The Godies.
Oh, yes. I know Hawkesbury. You're talking about Hawkesbury. Yes, yes, Hawkesbury. Yep.
All the way down to Liverpool and...
Really? Wow. Yeah, far
just,
out.
Just before Campbelltown. So...
Interesting.
Can you imagine what it's like for us as a club to try and reach out, not only to those clubs, but at the same time get them to travel to a central point to try and prove themselves.
To then also then travel, so they have to then travel to Paris so someone can pick them up, to then travel to Newcastle or travel to, like,
yes,
you know.
Correct.
It's just, and then I would imagine, I'm not a parent, but I would imagine if you're a parent and you're saying, okay, well, do I want my son to go play a local league competition where he might play Ron Massey or Sydney Shield or whatever, which I can go down to down the road here in the six teams, they'll develop him, whatever. Or do I say, hey, you can go play for Western Sydney, but we live in Liverpool, so I'm either going to have to now drive you all the way there, and then you're going to have to find a way to get to Newcastle, and then you might not even play. So the thing is they might do that. He might be a talented front row, a talented prop, whatever. and you might not even play. You might just be on the riding the bench all day till you might be injury replacement or whatever, right? So I remember a story. My dad, when I was a junior club, we were
Junior club?
Hunters Hill. Hunters Hill Rugby. We went down to Harbord one day, and it was piercing down rain. It was like,
was that a curl park?
Yeah. We were just down in Manly. It was just terrible weather.
Damn.
And it was, I think we 8 a.m. kickoff. There was no coffee van, so of course Dad's getting a bit like, hey, what's going on here? And I was. And I'd been to training and done all that. I didn't play very well, and I think I ended up playing about 5 minutes or something. And Dad was like, if you make me travel all the way to Manly to watch you play 5 minutes again with no coffee van and the pissing rain, I'm just going to not take you out in rugby. Like, I'm just not going to drive you. Because it's, you don't realise as a kid that you're putting your parents as well. Like, your journey includes everybody to get you there. It's not just, I'll just go down to a local park and play rugby. Mm. You know what I mean? So it's affecting everybody. So how was your family in that for you? I'm sure out west there would have been a lot of offers to play rugby league and sort of be a little bit more, let's say, localised. What was the information that your parents and your family gave you at that point?
So I didn't realise my dad used to play rugby. So this is talk about the 1973 Tongan team that beat the Wallabies.
Yep.
He would have been selected for that, but he opted to go work on the merchant ships instead, just because at that time money was scarce and he preferred to go help his family out. However, he played alongside Tarai Kefu's dad, Fateh. Oh, yeah.
Yep.
And he was telling me all the stories because they played for the same club. My dad was about like 15 years younger than they were. However, they all grew up. They played the same brand of rugby.
Yep.
They decided to stay in Queensland, but my dad by then was working on merchant ships in Sweden.
Oh, wow. Jeez.
Fast forward when they popped me out. basically, I had no idea that they played rugby.
Right, okay.
So when I started to play rugby, Dad sat me down and he started to recollect some stories. I said, oh, wow, this is awesome. Why didn't you tell us? It's like, well, the reason why is because we want you to focus on education.
Mm,
we want you to have the opportunities we never had.
Right.
I said, all right, great. However, I sort of set myself a little challenge to say, because they just wanted education only, forget sport, that can come later. I wanted to do both.
Mm.
So this is where, like, I was trying to find as much information as possible to say, right, what will it take for me to keep my grades up but still be able to play the game? So went to a school called Granville South High School, which is part of Sydney West Region.
Yep.
This is in the combined high school sector.
Yep.
So I had to catch a train from Granville to Penrith, which took about 45 minutes.
Yep.
Then walk an extra half hour to the training.
Yep.
Do the training, walk back to and same routine. The time I spent on the trains was my study time.
Oh, okay. Interesting. Yes. Yep. Very nice.
I was pretty fortunate because I didn't get bugged or robbed.
Well, I wouldn't try.
Well, no. I was pretty small as a kid.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Oh, wow.
So, and obviously there's been high crime rates on the trains at that time.
Yeah.
But I was, pretty fortunate to keep those grades up, but to still be able to play the sport as well.
Yeah.
Now, the interesting part is when the teacher taught me rugby, he really didn't teach me rugby, like the technical side.
Okay.
He actually put it in a way that was my strength, which was maths. So, you're trying to find the shortest route possible to the rucks.
Yeah, right. Yeah,
not every ruck, every second ruck.
Mm, yeah. So, interesting.
So okay. Rather than like doing the old loop to come in and be impactful, I was a Richie McCaw. I was a cheat. So
that's
I was just taking the straightest direct route.
Yep.
But got away with it. But it was quite effective simply because I'd be the first one there.
And it's that's also well above the time as well. Obviously, when you were playing at 16, I mean, Richie was really one of the early ones, and George Smith as well, one of the early ones to perfect that. They said, why would I run horizontally if the breakdown's going to end up there?
Correct.
That's stupid. I'll just run that way.
Yep.
And you see the support lines that, you know, Aaron Smith's famous for. It. He would almost pass, and he'd almost end up, you look at the footage, and he's already offside, and you're just going, how does this work? But then the ruck will end almost at his feet. You're like, how did you know that was going to happen? You
exactly.
Know? Crazy.
And I think, well, I didn't develop this later. It was more energy management, because I think the All Blacks were really the pioneers of setting areas of the field, like, you know, how you have like 1-2-2-1 two pods of forwards, then the backs are outside.
Yep.
Yeah, they were the pioneers of getting that set up just because of energy management. Like, you don't want guys, well, you look at the rugby back in the 70s and 80s, they'll run like headless chooks, right?
Yeah.
Just because that's all they knew.
Yeah.
But it got to the point where they're using the whole field now that most people don't need to be all in one area.
Yeah, and so, involved in every play. Absolutely, correct. Absolutely. Yeah. And it's these things that are very interesting, because you look at most forwards, and you look at a system now where you maybe chuck them in a system, you go, right, you're going to stand on the edge, and you're going to be here for the breakdown or for the ruck or whatever. And you look at them, and I'll never forget, I go to all these Tars games or a Wallaby game, and you'd be like, yeah, Dan Coles is just chilling out there in the wing. He doesn't even do it. He's just seagulling. What's going on? And I'm like, he's not just out there because he's catching his breath. He's there for a specific purpose. He's part of the system, right? Mm-hmm. So then then it only really trickles down to about shoot shield level, and it doesn't really trickle down in schoolboys, but that old, even like you and me, we're CHS boys, right? So I remember playing Granville. When you said Granville, I remember played Buck and Shield against Granville.
Wow.
Today, jeez. I still saw from those some of those shots, mate. Yeah, out at Merrylands as well, before Eric Tweeder was built. That's where we played too.
There you go.
But yeah, no, look, it's crazy how when you're younger, or when as you're sort of starting to come up to play rugby, if you're a hooker or you're a forward, it's right. You're in the middle of the field. You just run. Maybe you'll get the ball. Maybe you won't. If you get it, run over someone. If you're in the line, hit someone, right? Where then it gets to the professional level, or even at a semi-professional level, and then it's like, that's cool that you're doing that, but stand over here, and then you go, whoa, that makes so much more sense.
Yeah.
Why am I running from every ruck when I could just chill out here and
pilfer
that ruck, or, you know, be effective, or be support play or whatever? Then you start popping up and you're scoring tries, you're going, this rugby game's actually quite fun, you know?
Yes. So. Well, I mean, getting to that point, it's more about talent identification, right?
Yeah.
You mentioned Dane Coles.
Yeah.
Like, there's a reason why he's on the wing. It's because he's a bloody quick hooker.
Yeah, exactly.
I was quite envious of it, obviously. But at the same time, so be it. That's his strength. Whereas my strength was more argy-bargy in the middle.
Yeah. Well, I must say there's been a couple of times that you and Ben Robinson in particular caught a couple of intercepts, and I was like, nah, they're gone. Don't worry about it. Don't even try, boys. He's gone.
If only. We were good for 10 metres, and then we get caught, right?
I'll never forget there was a call Greg Clark made. Again, Ben Robinson intercepts a ball, and Clark, he goes, he's away. He's gone. Call it up, boys. It was so funny.
I know the game.
Yeah,
it was semi-final against Brumbies.
It was Brumbies. Yeah. And he's like, I was looking for support. I was like, he doesn't need support. He's fine. Let it go.
Mind you, I'm right behind him. Yeah.
Really?
Yeah, yeah.
You were just filthy. You're like, mate, Robbo, mate. I was there.
No, I was absolutely spent. And I'm like, don't you dare go far, Robbo. But, yeah. But speaking of which, when it comes to talent identification, everyone's got, like, a strength.
Mm.
It's just a matter of where to use it.
Exactly. Yep.
I'm really enjoying the brand of rugby South Africa are playing.
Yep.
Simply because they've got talent in the air.
Mm.
It's a very underutilized space.
Mm.
I mean, probably by far the best Rugby World Cup we've seen, France 2023.
Oh,
the quarterfinals.
Insane. Like, insane.
Absolute entertainment.
Yeah.
That's the kind of brand of rugby we all want to see.
But even the Portugal-Fiji game, the last, I was like, oh, this is – and then for Portugal to beat Fiji. And
amazing.
Even their story to get into the World Cup.
Correct.
They play the USA.
Yeah.
Who they've never beaten. Mm. And you're going, oh, USA going to flog Portugal. And Portugal, very Bernard Foley-esque, just last minute, just bang, see you later, kicks it. Portugal goes nuts. It's nothing like seeing the Americans lose. It's hilarious, but it's awesome. It
says the whole world.
Yeah. Says everyone that's not American, of course.
Yeah.
But then they come in and you go, wow, like, obviously they're in our pool, so it's a bit, but it's almost like every pool anyone could have won. You looked at the Samoa, Argentina, Japan, England, and there was another team I forgot, but there was in that pool.
Mm.
And most games I was like, geez, I mean, Samoa might get through, geez, Japan might get through, England might get through, Argies might. It was very hard to call a lot of these pools. Mm-hmm. And then even Pool C, which we were in, Wales, Fiji, us, Portugal, and Georgia.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we were going, wow, you know, there's a case to be made that Georgia could get through that. Fiji and Wales obviously end up got through, and we could get through. And if we don't perform, we're going to, you know, do pretty. And the same thing, not necessarily the news. It always seems like the New Zealands have New Zealand and then everybody else kind of down here. But France beat them day one, and it's just set the tone for the World Cup. You know what I mean? So it was awesome. And then you had that one of the best things I love about rugby is you can have a game like they did with the South Africa Island game, where it's 12-9 and it's kicking for the purists, as they say.
Mm-hmm.
And then you can have a New Zealand Island game a week later in the quarterfinals. That's 22-24 or something, and goes down to the absolute wire, and you're just on the edge of your seat. I mean, I still see Instagram reels of Kiwis just going, oh my God, what's going to happen? See, Warlocks at the ball. And it's crazy. Just everyone just stopped and watched this Ireland New Zealand game. Mm-hmm. And you would just, no matter what semi final you were watching, you thought, wow, this could go either way.
Absolutely.
You know, crazy.
And it's great to see the game, rugby, get to a point where it's competitive from even the tier two teams.
Yep.
But even more so, the tier three teams.
Yeah, yeah.
And this is where, talking about my experience growing up, it's just education.
Mm.
I think there's a big lack of education of rugby itself as a sport.
Okay.
Well, consider this. I came at a time where, obviously, dominated by Parramatta Eels.
Yeah, yeah.
However, one of the general managers at Two Blues just got whisper that I was able to progress through to the schoolboy ranks, and he said, hey, next year we want you to trial with us simply because not only of your efforts, but we also want to help you develop into the educational side as well.
Oh, okay. So when you say educational side, can you elaborate? You mean like as in the more like the ethos of rugby, or more sort of how rugby is broken down? What do you mean by the education?
All elements. So obviously you got the sport.
Yeah.
But then you got pre and post the game.
Mm, okay.
Where I was taught how to be a gentleman.
Right.
Yes.
Right.
So when you go to the clubs, you meet the opposition, you just have a friendly chat.
Yep.
But obviously you flick the switch.
Yep.
You go whack the crap out of them. And then post, you share a beer with them.
Yep.
And then you get so much, you actually swap information.
It's crazy, isn't it? It's one of the only sports that I've noticed, really the only sport. If you watch rugby to the end and you watch the pregame, well, you won't really see much in the pregame, but in the postgame, everyone jersey swaps now. You know, you might be standing on the opposite side of Kevin Mialamu, and you boys will just be having just a normal, hey, g'day mate, how's the family? What's going on? Like, how are you? There's no malicious intent. Half the time, everyone's bleeding.
you're just going,
when you guys just beat each other up like 10 seconds ago, it's insane. Yeah.
And you're pretending not to be hurt.
Yeah.
No, because it's a mindset. You don't want to show your opposition that you're hurt.
Yeah, meanwhile you're all strapped up and you're bleeding halfway. Yeah.
Yeah, you're mummified. Yeah.
I remember George Gregan came to a rugby dinner that we had at Epping Boys one day. We're at the Epping RSL. And he said, one of the best things that rugby has taught me, as you just said, is to be a gentleman.
Mm.
And then he would list all the things that were that rugby has given him. So he'd say things like, you could take your boots anywhere in the world and have a game of rugby, even if it's just at a park somewhere or anything like that.
Mm-hmm.
But what isn't, I don't believe, that's highlighted enough is what rugby is like outside of the 80 minutes, outside of the 100 meter by 60 meter field we play on, is the camaraderie, is the kinsmanship that we have with each other, right? And these are the amateur values, let's call it, that haven't really been passed on to the professional era, because in the professional era, unfortunately, it's all about making money. And it's all about making a dollar. And that's why I think some of the purists go, oh, well, rugby kind of died when it started to turn professional a bit, because you would play rugby because you enjoyed rugby. You'd be in your ones. You'd go to the clubhouse, have a few beers, how's it going, blah, 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 and then you'd go back. But it was a gentlemanly thing to do. They were hosting you, so you showed up, you put on a feed. It's very nice of you. Thank you very much. Everyone played well, blah, blah, blah. And when I went to New Zealand in 2019, I don't want to make this about me, by the way. It's not my rugby journey, but what I'm saying is I'm trying, in an interview like this, I'm trying to get, you know,
I think what your audience needs is to know you better as well.
For sure.
It's great you can relate to it.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. So, and that's where I'm trying to come from in this next sort of scenario, right? So I go to New Zealand 2019 and being in Australia my whole life playing rugby, kind of shake hands, get a three cheers to the opposition, blah, 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 and you might have a chat or good game or whatever. Go to New Zealand and I'm playing Prem Reserve and I'm sitting here with the Premiers and going, wow, this is great. You know, this is awesome. And all in our ones kit, hey, we're going to go to Lincoln University's clubhouse today. Everyone put your ones kit on. So we'd shower, put our ones kit on. I'm thinking, okay, we're going to Lincoln Uni. Is there a reason we're here? And they put a big spread. Everyone's having a beer. Captains jump up, say whatever, blah, blah, blah. Mm-hmm. And then we hit the town and we're on. And then we'd go to town oftentimes and we'd see the other boys in one kit. Oh, g'day, mate. Hey, Jay, I got a beer over here. Mm-hmm. Yeah, here you go, mate. Yeah. Geez, this guy can hit harder. Maybe if he's trying to pick up a lady, you go, geez, this fella, big fella. You know, he's good man, blah, blah. It's crazy how you can be a rugby player on an opposition team. I can be a rugby player on an opposition team. And afterwards, we've just got this ultimate bond, ultimate connection with each other just from playing a sport. It's nuts, isn't it?
And here's my opinion why, Nick. It's because I know you're giving it your all.
Yeah.
And I know I need to give it my all to get better than you.
Yeah. It's a mutual respect thing, isn't
Absolutely.
It?
Absolutely. Yeah. That's all it is. Not many people would understand that if they were just to watch the game.
Yeah.
However, the game happens both on and off the field, to which where one of my friend's father passed away, who worked or managed both Waratahs and Australia, let alone Norse and Mossman.
Yeah.
His approach was amazing, to the sense that the rugby community was his family.
Mm.
And we still see that now where globally any friend that you came across, they will still be able to meet you wherever you are, sit down, catch up, connect, discuss.
Yep.
Because, yeah, I think it's just that mutual respect of each other, but also what the game has been able to provide us away from the game.
Mm, yeah. And it's I find rugby at a lot of times as that ultimate way of networking, right? Because, as you said, you got that mutual respect and that mutual admiration. But I would imagine when you go into a business sense, he's a rugby player, you go, okay, I know that he's disciplined. I know that he can work in a team. I know all these. It's almost like a free education, literally, in a lot of ways. Yeah. You're showing a lot of values by just playing the sport, right? You know how to work in a team. You know how to talk to people, you know, how to communicate. You've had this plenty of times. You're on the try line, down by five. Hey, boys, you know, we've got to rally here. Like, let's go. And I'm sure there were times where, you know, Dave Dennis is captain or young Michael Hooper's captain or whatever, and sometimes they just need an experienced staff to be like, hey, boys, like, what are we doing? I know I'm not the captain, but shit, like, we're going to go here. Like, let's lift. You know what I mean? Where a lot of other people would go, I'm the captain. Why are you speaking? Correct. I'm the captain. You know what I mean? And you'd see that in other sports. I'm the captain. I'm the one with the armband. I've got the seat next to my name. I got to do all the speaking. Mm. And, you know, rugby is one of those things where you can literally have a discussion and everyone's voice is, hey, maybe let's go over here. I've noticed on the sideline we're outnumbering them every time.
Correct.
Get the ball to the wing, we're there, you know. Everyone goes, oh, solid idea. Thanks, mate. And then you do it and it works. And there's just relief. It's just like, wow, that actually worked. How crazy is that?
No, absolutely.
It's
And with the captaincy, it tends to be just the letter.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's probably the most prominent point, is that you have so much experience within your team, it'd be quite dumb of a captain to take all the responsibility onto themselves.
Yeah.
Whereas there's different segments of a game, such as set piece, defense, attack. You want the generals in those departments to actually be in charge of that as well. The best captains are the ones that really don't have to speak.
Interesting, isn't it? So in your playing career, who was, I guess, your captains or your players who you just felt like, okay, cool, he's... we're completely comfortable with him running this. Sometimes with captains, you're a bit like, maybe this guy's kind of been captain just to be tested out. Mm. Maybe, you know, maybe he's the next captain in line. He may not be ready yet. When you're a player and there's a captain been appointed, maybe great examples, a young Michael Hooper, 22 years old. He is captain of the Waratahs and then a couple of years later becomes captain of the Wallabies. Dave Dennis at the time gets injured. He then becomes the captain. Now, at that time, it was you, Sakopi, there was Ben, there was
Cliff, Kirtley.
There was Hoylesey, there was Kirtley.
Mitch Chapman.
There was Swoop was at centre. Yep. I mean, there were heaps of players that they chose from.
Nick Phipps,
Fangsy, there were heaps of players they chose from, and they choose a 22-year-old boy from Manly, which, hey, obviously, great decision on hindsight. How do you go into that situation knowing that here's a young guy almost thrown to the wolves in a lot of respects? You're captaining your state. In a year that you're one of, if not the two favourites to win the comp, how do you respond to that? How are you in that situation?
Business as usual. Simply because I knew my area was the scrum.
Okay.
If that wasn't working, there's no way our backs can get that front foot yardage they need.
Yeah.
and that's all you needed to do was do your job and do it to the best of your ability.
Right.
However, when it came to a team sense, you just know you don't want to let the person next to you down.
Sure.
Yeah.
And how and what was the communication like with someone like a Michael Hooper at that young age? Was he going, hey, boys, tell me the picture you're seeing? Or was it very – because obviously he's on the side of the scrum, but he's not in the meat and the potatoes of the scrum, right? So you guys are seeing a different picture potentially to what he's seeing.
Yeah.
And the backs are very similar as well. So – did you notice maybe he might have chatted to you guys a little bit differently than maybe he chatted to the backs because he's in tight? Or was there any – what was the communication like between Hooper and sort of everybody else at that time, being a young captain?
Yeah, being a young captain, I think he had a few things to observe. So, for example, if there was a player backs wanted specifically, he'd ask me to say, hey, can we get the scrum this way?
Right, okay.
I said, yeah, sweet. Other times, he'd probably go to those generals such as the Hoylesey's, the Burn of Volleys, just to understand where on the field we're playing and what play we need to execute.
Right.
Purely because where we are on the field.
Right.
But when it came to communication as a team, it was great. It was brief and simple. It's like, okay, hey, guys. Simple. We know our jobs.
Yeah.
Let's do it.
Let's just go out there and smash it out. Beautiful.
Yeah.
Now, that 2014 season, let's take you back, mate, 10 years this year. So, the 10-year anniversary, 2024, 2014.
Jeez. 10 years.
Sorry, mate. showing his age here a little bit.
A few greys in my bloody beard.
So, 2024 season. So, obviously, as we started before, you won the Matt Burke Cup 2012, sorry. Mm-hmm. You and the Waratahs at that point are leading up to something that's becoming really great. I believe 2012 you had Chris Hickey, right? That was Chris Hickey's last year, wasn't it?
Correct. Oh, actually, no. It was Michael Foley.
Michael Foley, yeah, that's right. Michael Foley. And then he left, and then Al Gaffney came in for a little bit, and then they signed Checker, and then signed Israel Folau too. I was like, geez, Louise, the guns that we've just brought in. Mm-hmm. And then I think we signed – Hooper 2013 maybe or two.
So Hooper came 2014. No, 2013.
2013. Yeah, that's right. And that 2013 season was pretty good season all in all. We're a little bit up and down. A lot of that was injuries as well. Going into the 2014 season, right? We've still got essentially the same squad, and we've just added Israel Folau, who's just played the Lions test the year before. Mm-hmm. What was the feeling going into that season? Were you guys very confident, we're going to win the comp this year? Or how – and then obviously you had Checker at that point. I think he was just about to become the Wallabies head coach as well, or maybe the year after.
Year after.
Oh, it was the year after. Okay. Yeah. By that 2014 season, you've got a little bit of chemistry there. What was the feel going into 2014?
It was a continuation of the 2013 season where Michael Checker's main focus was the foundations, which was fitness.
Yeah, running up the Balmoral Burn. I remember you boys doing that and the Coogee Stairs.
Cooper Park Stairs, you name it.
Yeah,
any
yeah.
hill, yeah. I think Michael Checker the fell in love with hill. It.
Yeah, I saw it.
Yeah.
I saw him a couple of times driving the car. I think he had like a megaphone or something screaming, come on, boys, run faster.
No, to his credit, he actually joined us.
Really?
Yeah.
Yeah, right.
No, Michael Checker. Left from the front, eh? Yeah, absolutely. Like, obviously, not as high, as fast, as we were. But, I mean, it just goes to show how a simple act of that can motivate a team.
For sure, yeah.
That when you get buy-in from the coach and the coaching staff, might I add.
Yeah.
It speaks volumes.
Right.
Simply because the old analogy of monkey see, monkey do.
Yeah, yeah.
We're all humans, right?
Absolutely. Yeah. But I guess as well, if you're a coach and you do that, you automatically got the respect of the players. Mm. You're like, you know what? He's not asking me to do something that he wouldn't do himself.
Correct.
You know what I mean? Yeah. So I can – you run up that hill like, you know what? If Czech can do it, he's a fairly old bastard now. If I run up this hill at a young age – I'm, you know, 22, 20, whatever.
Yeah.
Why can't I do it? You know what I mean? And even in a rugby team, you see the old heads do it. You're like, oh, shit, now, great, now I have to do this. I was actually planning to sit this one out, but now I've actually got to run up the hill. Yeah. You know what I mean? So it's good to see that, get that reinforcement, I guess, as a
– correct.
I mean, as a player.
Yeah.
So that 2014 season, then you come in and then we have a great start of the season, which is when we've just played some afternoon footy. We were starting to get those fixtures back into New South Wales and all that sort of thing. And the slogan that year was belief, right? So for the members fans, it was, hey, we need a bit of belief here from you boys. Were there times in 2014 where you could feel the members or the fans in general? Because you were getting a lot of, at that time, you were starting to win, getting momentum. A lot of people just kept feeling ANZ. It was slowly becoming to the point where semi-final sold out, ANZ 65 around that sort of environment.
Yeah.
A few years prior, you have a members forum saying, hey, you guys need to run the ball more. And then 3 years later, you win a comp, right? Yeah. So how was that? Did you notice the fans were believing more that year in 2014?
Yes. So in 2013, I can still remember like Allianz back in the day. It would be half full.
Yeah.
And I remember the very first game, it was against the Force.
Yep.
On a Sunday afternoon. it was like still similar in terms of being empty.
Yeah.
By the time we got to play against, I'm just thinking the Bulls, they were starting to pack out.
Yeah.
Yeah. So from the very start of the season all the way right through, you can start to see the stadium not only just be filling, but also, as you say, belief, because they were part of that journey.
Mm.
In a sense that rather than focus on the rugby, what we were doing was dispersing ourselves to the wider community.
Yeah.
I think Michael Checker did a great job to bring the game out to those wider communities.
Yeah, absolutely. And that's when the Bush to Beach really started there.
Correct.
The thing that we've been doing lately. And when Allianz, and, you know, to New South Wales' credit, when Allianz got was redevelopment, they took it to the country. Then they went to Brookvale, then they went to Leichhardt, they went to all these places trying to, you know.
Yeah. I still think they can do a substantially better job.
Absolutely. Oh, absolutely.
But in saying that, I think there's obviously priorities when it comes to running a club.
Sure.
Needless to say, can't fault the effort.
Yeah.
But I just know from my own experience going out to those rural communities, there's much, like, let alone Western Sydney.
Yeah.
I mean,
the country's another great example. They get neglected as well.
Absolutely.
Right? And this is, my grandfather, John Phelps, he was president of country rugby back in the day. And was, yeah, and mum would tell me stories about how they would go up to Cowra Rugby Club and they would open the ribbon and, it, you know, Cowra would just be packed at the rugby club, you know, Shoalhaven where they were down in now in Shoalhaven. Shoalhaven Showgrounds would be packed. Then they end up building a rugby club there. And then it just, you know, everyone, pretty much no matter where you want to go, people want to watch and want to be a part of rugby. And yeah. I think sometimes on the outside looking in, it almost seems like the administration almost doesn't believe that there would be enough of a catchment to, you know, attract people to come and watch rugby. But, I mean, there were games at Shoalhaven Showground of New South Wales. They'd tour, obviously, the country back in the day in the amateur era.
Yep.
They would play Argentina at Shoalhaven Rugby Park, you know, and everyone would just come in and see it, as you would, right? So what are the things that we can do to get those country areas and the Western Sydney areas back to not necessarily the same level, because obviously that'll take a very long time and consistent effort, but back to, you know what, we'll give rugby a crack rather than rugby league. If you're running New South Wales rugby, what would be one of the first things you'd do?
I think one of the first steps would be getting into the public education system.
Mm. Yep.
So I understand I'm just talking from my own experience.
Yep.
But I remember the time where combined high schools was so dominant that when it came to play GPS and CAS and all those other combined schools, we absolutely bitched those schools.
Really?
Well, put it this way, we were exposed to 21-year-olds.
Yeah,
we weren't exposed to 18-year-olds.
True.
Yeah. So by the time we came
–
playing against these greater public schools, we're like, oh, that's cute. I remember my first tackle too. No, but it was simply because we were just exposed.
And you were men. It's that man strength over, you know, over boy strength, right?
Yeah.
So that's interesting. That brings up another topic that I was kind of going to lean into. So we've noticed lately, and we touched on a little bit at the start with the GPS, and a lot of the talent now are sort of feeding out to the GPS. And you see a lot of these leagues as well, they'll play GPS and then they get signed to rugby league, right? Which is crazy. They're actually in the system. Here they are playing rugby on a huge stage. Mm-hmm. I was at Joey's Riverview last year at Leichhardt. It was full. I could have thought the Tigers had won the premiership. Mm-hmm. It was that full. It was every, and then the stand collapsed and it made news. But there are people who love this game. Like, everyone keeps saying rugby's dying in this country, and then you go to an event like that and you're like, geez, could have fooled me. I didn't know that rugby's dying here. People want to play it. Why do you think there is a big emphasis on talent ID in the GPS schools, the CIS schools, and all these other schools, rather than the CHS schools, which, as we've sort of established before, is getting all the actual league talent, like Kingswood Boys High or Asquith Boys High or Homebush Boys High, or all these boys who then go play Ron Massey or Sydney Shield or go play AFL. And then, you know, you turn the TV on and, oh, this guy, Nelson Asolomani, he's playing for the Kiwis. Oh, that's crazy. Or Jerome Luai, he's just signed a $1.5 million contract with the Tigers. Didn't you go to school with him? Like, what's how can anyone justify almost ignoring 90% of the population to focus on 6 or 7 schools?
It's a very good question, Nick. When you find the answer, come back to me.
I'll let you know. You'll be the first one to tell.
No, but you're absolutely right. It's what puzzles me is the fact that we're just limiting our resources.
Yeah, but just by the numbers, right? I mean, just by the participation numbers. If you focus on 6 schools, which is the GPS, let's say. Obviously, I'm excluding the CIS, like Knox and Trinity and stuff. But let's just say we talk about GPS and then the rest of the public schools. You have 6 GPS schools and then everybody else public.
Mm.
Just by the numbers, if you said, okay, I'm going to be in charge of CHS, okay, I'm going to be in charge of GPS. So just by the numbers, you've already got more talent because you've got more people to choose from.
Absolutely.
Crazy.
I mean, I'm not the best at math, but I'm pretty sure, like, on a scale of 5-to-1 ratio.
The talent's there.
But at the same time, it's probably a matter of, how would I put this? So back to my experience where going through CHS versus GPS, dominate them, yet for some reason they still select those guys in the GPS schools.
Mm.
Which is probably why, like, it's quite demoralizing if you went to a combined high schools.
Absolutely.
You don't have much credit, right?
Absolutely.
Yeah. And it's very subjective.
Yeah.
Rather than technical, where the rugby does the talking.
Yeah.
So, yeah, it's a bit of a dilemma, so to speak.
Yeah, well, I mean, I remember Nick McArdle, I think on Hamish McLennan's last exit, he said, oh, is it a coincidence that, you know, the last seven Australian CEOs or presidents or whatever have all been from Shaw? Do you think that's a coincidence? And Hamish McLennan laughed it off and said, oh, it's just a crazy conundrum. But when you think about it, I mean, that's been happening since almost John O'Neill, when he was the CEO in the early 2000s.
Yeah.
But, you know, since then, it's all been very, either you played Sydney Uni or you went to a private school. Mm. I remember being at TARS and doing work experience at TARS 2012. We had to get this like little book that we would sell to people and it had everyone's bio on them and blah, blah, blah.
Right.
And I remember pointing out to one of the, you know, fan management people who didn't care what I'd say anyway, but I was just like, oh, so I've noticed like 90% of these players either went to like Joey Scott's Riverview, whatever, or play Sydney Uni. Isn't that crazy? And they were just like, yep. And then just sort of just didn't really. And I was like, oh, okay. Well, maybe it's just because I'm doing work experience, doing all the shit jobs that they weren't answering. But when you're a player, you're in that GPS system, you go, cool, I'm from a rugby family, beautiful. Maybe you've gone to your dad's school or something like that, you're saving a bit of money. You want to believe that you have the right, just like I have the right, no matter what your parents' income is or what my parents' income is, that if you're better than me, you will be picked. That's, I mean, if you're playing sport, it's competition.
Yes. Yeah.
But you don't want to play a competition that's rigged, right? And unfortunately, that is the perception, whether that's real or not, whether the fact that the GPS have better facilities, maybe have better players, maybe have better nutrition, whatever, whether they are actually better than the CHS is irrelevant.
Correct.
Because it's the perception of you guys are picking 90% of the population over here. And look, I've coached at Joey's, I've coached at all these other great schools as well, right? So I've been very blessed to sort of have that in my rugby experience as well. But it's not really their fault. Like, I don't want to blame the schools. It's not the GPS school's fault. I mean, they're just trying to coach their rugby players to the best of their ability and good on them. It's the next level above that. Oh, okay, well, I've noticed that we're going to go see all the internal trials for New South Wales schools all are at Knox. Right. Yep. Or Riverview, or they never come to Homebush Boys High or North Sydney Boys High, or let's have it at this neutral ground. It's always at these areas. And obviously there's connections and all that sort of stuff in there that goes along with that. As a ex-Wallaby and as an ex-Waratah, you've got to experience what life is like after that professional environment. What's your thoughts on the environment now? In terms of where rugby is and where do you see it improving and what are the steps to improve it?
Good question. So I'm just going to be completely objective.
Yep.
It's dying. Now, here's why. Not because of the setup or the systems that are associated. I'm just talking pure economics.
Yep.
So as we alluded to, that we're only just reaching out to about, 25%?
Yep.
Yep. Where we could expand that more.
Sure.
But now the market's changed.
Mm.
The sporting market, that is.
Mm.
So okay. If you were to go out to these rural areas where even marketing the game of rugby is non-existent, you're getting other codes coming in. Marketing,
yep.
AFL.
Yep.
Fair credit to AFL. They've done a great job. And guess what? They're pretty smart because, again, AFL is a great game where it's catered for all shapes and sizes.
Yep.
And they're targeting basketball teams.
Yeah, well, that's right.
We could do the same thing,
absolutely.
Right?
Absolutely.
We need some locks. We need some powerful locks. We
need some big fellas right? up front. Absolutely.
Yeah. But then you go to another area where rugby's not existent, but rugby league's very heavy.
Yeah.
There's so much talent there that what do the people that don't make it,
exactly, yeah.
Do.
Yeah, exactly.
Right? So this is where macroeconomically in Australia, we just need to be a bit more strategic by simply talking about, not talking, but even just promoting a game to say, remember the commercial, the Wallabies commercial?
Yes, I used to love these commercials. Do you remember the lean one where Giddo had a kick and then he would lean and then everyone else would kind of go like this, that all lean, and then the beer would lean as well. Yeah. I used to love these commercials growing up.
But those commercials sit prominently with a lot of my colleagues that didn't even follow rugby.
Yeah.
Right? Absolutely. It's simply because marketing is powerful done the right way.
Absolutely.
So unless there's some sort of approach to say, right, rugby's back on the map thanks to this 2023 World Cup. Come see the future Wallabies presenting at the 2027 World Cup.
Yeah. Yeah.
Live right now. And you can say, yes, I saw their development.
Yeah.
Right? We've got 4 years to host one of the best World Cups.
And the Lions test in between as well.
That too.
Yep.
So objectively speaking, you want to expand your market to the like other sports.
Absolutely.
Yep. Because if we take it back a step, you look at all the leagues that we've put on contracts.
Yeah.
We actually had to spend 3 or 4 times the normal amount of a typical rugby player.
Yes, yes.
To get them to play rugby.
Which is must be demoralizing for a rugby player. Like you've done all the hard work. Mm. And obviously, I mean, they've done the hard work as well, obviously. But you're the one in the system. You've been in the system for 10 years, right? Mm-hmm. You're coming up, you're doing blah, blah, blah. You get to that situation. Let's take a Dylan Peach, for example. You go through the sevens, through the system, bang, your starting winger.
Mm-hmm.
Then you turn on the news and go, we've signed Joseph Suaalii to 1.5, whatever it is, 5-year deal, starting 2025.
Yeah.
Going at, didn't know we had that much money, number one. And number two, why? Where did this come? It must be so demoralizing to almost be in a situation where you're going, you've done all the hard work, and this guy who's from another code just jumps in. Now, obviously, it's worked with Izzy, worked with Sonny, it worked with all these different people who established at high level. But you could relatively argue that Joseph Suaalii was very no-named at the time, and then he gets signed, and everyone's going, whoa, what's happening here, right? Yeah. How obviously doesn't show a lot of faith in the system or a lot of faith in the players at the time. And as you've said, you've elaborated on why that is. But why do you think rugby's dying with the fan base? Do you think that the fans maybe think that rugby's being disingenuous or that rugby isn't? It's like, well, if they're not going to come to my school, well, then screw them. We'll just send them to league. Why do you think the fans aren't on board like they used to be? Is it just winning? Does winning solve all the problems?
No. We're pretty lucky and unlucky as a country to say that we're there when it's good.
Yeah, yeah.
But we're not there when it's shit.
Yeah.
Right?
Pretty fair weather, aren't we?
Yeah, quite fickle.
Yeah, very much so.
And I think, I'm not too sure. You don't really have to be an expert, so to speak, of a sport.
Sure.
I think it's more about just, so I think when people relate to sport, especially in Australia, it's very circumstantial, as in moments in time, they decide when to choose it.
Right.
Rather than actually being on the journey.
Right. Interesting. Yeah. There's not that tribalism that goes with
correct.
It. Right. Yeah. Right.
Life's a journey, right?
Yeah. Some people will say rugby's a journey too.
Well, yes.
Hey, see?
Shout out to the rugby journey. No, but you're right. So you look at a journey. There's obviously peaks and troughs.
Yeah.
But that's the beauty about it.
Absolutely. Yeah.
Rarely do you see successful teams be consistent like the Patriots and whatnot.
Oh, the Crusaders, for example.
Correct.
In rugby term, yeah.
Yeah. But even more so, now the Springboks.
Yeah, well, yeah. And, you know, in 2011 and 2012, they were the champs, and then they dropped off for a bit, right? And then we kind of, now that we're 10th, we were second and sort of one and two with the All Blacks. And then all of a sudden, bang, here come the Springboks, two World Cups in a row. That's 8 years of like, that's not, we've won one tournament 1 year, we've got lucky, and another tournament, you know, this year and got lucky. That is 8 years of consistent. They'd beat the All Blacks, they'd beat us, they'd beat all the other best players in the world. I mean, they were just playing top line footy.
Yeah.
And a lot of that, I believe, and this is where I want to get your opinion on this too. I've very interesting, and I'm glad you brought up marketing. At the moment, you're a rugby player, right? You're in Australia. You go, okay, well, I believe another problem with Australian rugby is the lack of retention of players, right? So all of our players are going overseas, right? That's where all the good players are. You look at Marie Corbetti, Will Skelton, all these players who we sign on our ghetto laws, clause, they're all overseas. So you're a Tars, Brumbies, Reds member. You're going, cool, I can either go watch European footy where all the best players are, or I could watch a bunch of 20-year-olds put on a Sky Blue or a Maroons jersey, right? You don't have that. Still definitely have some Wallabies who participate, but it's not like you turn on early 2000s and you've got Gregham, Larkham, Roth. You know, you've got Chris Latham playing fullback. We've got, you know, all the legends of Australian rugby are still here. They're going to get their paycheck, and fair play to them. Go get that money. Go do you. But we don't advertise, hey, Will Skelton's playing La Rochelle this weekend. They're playing old mate who over here. He's going to win. Tune in on Stan Sport to see our captain, our newly named Wallaby captain, play over here. I used to always say, unless you knew rugby was on, you didn't know rugby was on.
Correct.
Right? And it had been happening for years. Mm-hmm. You would come in, unless you got a program or you were in a situation where you could do a bay walk at Balmain, right? Do the bay walk. Leichhardt number two, the Balmain muzzled Wolves play almost every weekend.
Yeah.
Almost every weekend. Mm-hmm. And you could literally put a sign and say, rugby this way. And people would go, oh.
Yeah.
Oh, let's go have a look at this rugby game. But no one markets it.
Correct.
And then you drive down the city here and you see billboards. NRL starts this time. AFL starts this time. Mm-hmm. All these other things. Have we just accepted that rugby is an amateur game in a professional world?
It's an interesting way of putting it, really. I think yes and no. I mean, let's take it back a step. Why did the game turn professional?
Well, geez, that's a good question. Well, at the time we were losing our players to league and Super League anyway. Mm-hmm. And I actually interviewed Tony Dempsey, which you can find on Spotify, by the way, who founded Rupa. Mm-hmm. So he was one of the big founders of Rupa.
Yep.
And he was telling a story where Kearnsy and Tim Horan came up to him and said, look, we're losing all of our players to Super League. Tim Horan was about to sign a Super League. Mm-hmm. They said, we need to turn professional so we can actually show cause to why we should keep players in Australia. Now, obviously, that's Australia's turned professional at that point. I mean, there are still some countries that play rugby that aren't professional either. In terms of rugby turned professional, I don't know why rugby in general turned professional, but that's my little understanding of what I know about why we turned professional.
Yeah, no, basically it was Jono Lomu who made rugby exist on the world map.
Yeah. Well, he got offered a Dallas Cowboys contract.
Correct.
Yeah.
Right. And the only way they could keep him in the game was to make it professional.
To pay him, yeah.
Correct.
Yeah.
So I guess it's an even balance of keeping the game professional, but altruistically, keeping those values at heart as well.
Mm.
Like when it comes to marketing the game, I mean, why is it I get to see awesome little miniature AFL athletes, part like on the TV versus like miniature rugby players, right?
Yeah.
I think we just need to be conscious because now we've got another enemy. The Japanese competition.
Oh, yeah.
Right?
Yeah, exactly. And they're not short of funds either.
Well, not just that, but they're playing some spectacular rugby.
They are.
Which is very well. If I was just an average Joe, I'd be like, oh, that's interesting. Like, why are they running so much?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, absolutely. And it's got everything in Japan rugby, right? Like you've still got very skillful players over there. It used to be the opposite, as we know, right? Correct. It was still a developing country and it was like, oh, maybe you play in the league over there, it's a bit how you're going. Now that it's really blown up, you can go see Michael Hooper with Kieran Reid play, and they're just completely different style of footy to maybe they play in Europe. And you, I mean, you played for the Leicester Tigers, so you obviously you know the Europe footy. Mm-hmm. And then you go to Japan, and you go, this is an exciting brand of rugby that everyone can get around.
And it's a totally different brand just because the weather is so great for that running rugby.
Yeah, yeah, so exactly.
This is where, when we come back to marketing, how do you compete against those markets?
Yeah, well, I mean,
like Super Rugby Pacific.
Yeah,
great.
Yeah.
What I don't understand is, which games are the big games to go to?
Well, exactly, and I potentially have a solution, and I've just thought of this now.
Go on.
I think rugby should use Sevens as its main marketing tool, and reason I say that is, through my time at New South Wales Rugby, obviously we've seen the increase of females participation through Sevens.
Mm-hmm.
But Sevens gives every – you go to a Sevens game or a Sevens tournament here, right, and the absolute place is packed. It's 7 minutes of absolute action everywhere. It's easy on the eyes. People want to watch it. It's 7 minutes. Cool. It's almost like 2020. It's almost like the Big Bash, right? Everyone goes to the Big Bash. Now what are the reports at – cricket test level? Oh, we need to get rid of cricket test because it goes for 5 days and it's traditional. And what's going on? Because there's not enough sixes or there's not enough fours or someone scores a century or 400 balls or something. You know what I mean? Where in Big Bash, it's just bang, bang, bang. You're just going. And Sevens has that X factor excitement appeal, which will give more eyes on the game. And once you're in the game, you're hooked, right? That's half the battle, is just getting into rugby. Mm-hmm. And the allure is the Olympics. And I think that would be a great selling point. When the girls won Rio, they went to every club. There's photos of the Tars boys coming out doing a coaching clinic, and they'd go, oh, this is great. And we still had Andrew Kellaway and Ed Hannigan and Hugh Roach and a few of those boys. No one cared about them. They all went to go see the girls and their gold medal from Rio.
Yeah.
Because it's so different from everything else.
Yeah.
You imagine you're playing Sevens, you win gold. Well, back in the day, mate, you were 10, so you know, could have happened.
Yeah.
And I'm sure it could happen now, mate. It still can fit, mate, by the way.
Oh, thanks, mate. I wish. Now it'd have shed a few.
Oh, well, if you do a couple of laps with Hoops, mate, I mean, hey, who knows? You know, he might get you in. He has that hallway.
Yeah,
I'll do some
loops around a buffet for sure.
But you're there. So say you're in Sevens and maybe you're in a situation where you're in the same area or same friend group as someone like a Stephen Crichton or a, you know, Nathan Cleary or something, and you've got three NRL rings, or they've got three NRL rings, and you've got a gold medal. That is a totally different talking point to, wow, this guy's done it. He's reached the pinnacle. He's got three NRL rings. That's amazing.
Mm.
But he doesn't have a gold medal.
Yeah.
And that gold medal isn't just – you go to three NRL rings in Vancouver, London, doesn't matter.
Yeah.
You've got the gold medal.
Correct.
So it's like, wow, you're an Olympic athlete. You're in the Olympics. Yeah. That's crazy. That should be the selling point. Rugby to me, and maybe it's just to me because I love rugby, but it's not a hard sell. It's the values, the game itself, the fact it's for everybody. It's an easy sell for a lot of people. Hey, you want to play rugby, you're not making an NFL, mate, come play Sevens, come play 15s, whatever. Sevens gives that mix as well, where you can have those guys who are fast outside backs or even maybe very fit back rowers who maybe aren't getting a chance in the political environment in Australian rugby. Hey, go play Sevens. And then we build the Sevens up. And now we're known for a Sevens. If we build our men's Sevens up, we have dominant women's Sevens, dominant men's Sevens. Automatically, the eyes are going to go straight to these two. Then you start wondering, well, what are the Wallabies doing? What are the Waratahs doing? What are the Wallaroos doing? And then that's when it all starts. Everyone starts looking in. That's a potential solution.
Yeah.
The other solution, I believe, you look at New South Wales Rugby, they have Tarman and Targirl.
Yeah.
Where are Tarman and Targirl? You have sponsors. Why aren't the sponsors every week? Mm-hmm. You have Wally the Wallaby. Where's, like, I mean, I should be able to walk the streets and go, I saw Wally the Wallaby there yesterday, or I saw Tarman here yesterday. Or when I was Tarman, kids would flock to come see Tarman, right? Mm. Now, maybe it's just because it was me. Maybe kids love me. I don't know. But it was a situation where I felt like at times, geez, just use me. Like, you know, coach put me on, I'm here. Yeah. You know what I mean? It's situations where, like, you know, you could see Checker like punching a hole through a window or something. And I'm like, you know, maybe a situation where I've got a walkie, like, Check, mate, don't worry, just put me on. Give me a jersey, I'm on. Just something funny just to get, you know, get that mark and get people talking about rugby.
Yeah. No, very valid points too. I think you use the analogy of cricket, right?
Yeah.
Where you got Big Bash and then Test.
Yeah.
I mean, I love Test match.
Same.
Cricket.
Same.
But not many people understand why. but this is where I'll come back to the educational piece.
Yeah.
It's like, sevens is great. Don't get me wrong.
Yeah.
And I'm glad it's a global sport as well. Also an Olympic sport.
Yeah.
Really have been tuning into the global circuit as well.
Yep.
Now, those athletes are prime time athletes.
Absolutely. Yeah.
And usually it caters for a similar mold of athlete.
Mm, okay.
You really can't be that bespoke athlete, if that makes sense. Yeah. You can if it was specialized.
True.
Like you have the sweeper.
Yeah. Yeah.
You can be a tailored sweeper. Absolutely. Or someone that always has to win the ruck.
Yeah.
Great.
Yeah.
I think that's what I always come back to is the education of why the games are different.
Mm. And who's responsible for that education? Is it the players? Like, as I believe as players, it's our responsibility more than anyone to promote the game.
Absolutely. Right?
It's our responsibility to differentiate and lead by example. Like if you're old veteran in a rugby club, right? And you got this new boy, he's playing in your team and he just, oh, okay, cool guys, I've got a party to go to, see you later. And everyone else is on the field. You go, oh shit, okay, maybe I should, if I want to be part of this club, maybe I should do what these boys are doing.
Yeah.
You're leading the way. You're showing the value so other people can relate, right?
Absolutely. And I see that as probably the best giving part from rugby is that it taught you how to be a gentleman. So why not teach other people how to be a gentleman?
To that point, I was playing Gordon in 2020. I was playing for the Mighty Stags.
What grade?
I was playing fourth grade at the time, third and fourth grade at the time. Yeah, and this fella over here, jeez Louise. And so we're playing Parramatta at Chatswood, right? And there was a friend of mine called Nick Tracy Nick Tracy. Yeah. So he had all week, he was like, I'm going to run over Taff. He's mine. I got it. And I was injured. I'd torn some ligaments in my ankle. So I wasn't playing.
That's what you say.
That's what I'm I wasn't playing, guys. It's fine. I felt like I wasn't playing. All that was happening. And Tracy, I remember before he's like, yeah, I got him. Don't worry. Like he's retired. Like, how good can he be? I don't understand this. And he had this cutout image of you, of him making you, someone made a tackle of you and he just put his face on it. And he was like, that's going to be me on Saturday. That's it. Hashtag tackle tough. So funny. I got there. I'm on the sideline and all I hear is just whack. And I look up and I'm like, and Tracy's on the floor like after. I was going, oh my God, that sucks. And I'm just like, well, that worked out. And that was the first play of the game as well. It's hilarious. It was hilarious to see. But it was the thing that really took me back about you, which I was like, wow, that is pure rugby, is you played fourth grade and you stayed through Colts, stayed through first grade, stayed through women. You were running line, you were giving water, you just gave yourself to rugby. And I would even go around Gordon and everyone would say the same thing. Wow, look, Taff is here. He doesn't have to be here, but he's here still giving, still wanting to be there. Jack Dempsey at the time, he was helping out the Colts boys. He was doing that. And those leaders of the game that you see doing that, you go, wow, that's what this game's really about, right?
Yeah.
Like you're out here running. You could have said, you know what, I've played fourth grade. I've stayed here for first grade. I don't need to be here. I'm at Chatswood. I should just be on the highway going back to Parramatta or wherever. You know what I mean? But you stayed the whole day. It's like 6, 7 p.m. or whatever, and you're still there running line, kicking goals, doing whatever, like you're getting the ball, being ball boy. It's those values that we as a rugby community obviously really, really appreciate. But do you think as a professional athlete or as an ex-professional athlete, there's more responsibility on you to do that? Or do you think that's just it should just be the norm?
Yeah, it's an interesting question since the term professionalism, it's very it's such a variable.
It is.
I mean, to what extent can you push that professionalism?
Exactly.
And also, when can you be human?
Well, exactly.
I mean, look at all these cases of people going through mental pressures. That's a prime example of where we need to get the balance right.
Yeah.
And the reason why I did those things at Gordon is because it gave me such therapy.
Oh, wow. Okay.
Yeah. You know the best thing about playing fourth grade that year?
What?
So this was the year when COVID started to hit.
Yes, correct. Yes.
I just moved back from the UK anticipating a move to Japan, which didn't happen.
Right.
But what was the best thing was seeing how each and every one of you were willing to whack the shit out of me. No. But it actually brought some fucking great rugby.
Yeah, for sure.
So, I mean, can you imagine if our guy, like the professional guys, go back for a game?
Yeah, absolutely.
Like not only will the quality pick up, but just the intensity from guys that are in lesser grades.
Yeah.
Like what you're doing is you're proving to them that you can keep up, but also be the best if you want to be.
Yeah, absolutely.
I mean, the fact that most of your boys were out to take my head off.
Yeah.
Loved it.
Yeah.
I mean, I remember there was one time where we played semis, I think, and we lost at Warringah.
Yeah.
I was playing flanker the whole time, only because we didn't have many mobile forwards.
I did notice that actually. But
it got to the point where I got some sledge from your team.
Yeah, yeah.
But my team was doing the sledging for me.
Yeah.
For example, it's like, oh, they've got a hooker or a flanker. And then my teammate goes, yeah, but he's world class, right?
Yeah, well, it's very true.
It's
very true.
Even the ref had a giggle.
Yeah.
And that's like, it's those human elements of life that we actually forget when it takes to be a professional.
Mm.
So I don't know. It's probably a balance of nominating a club. However, the club should be nominated by the state team, not the individual. This is where there's a bit of a unmarked territory, because when you sign up, the Players Association make sure that it's got the best interest for the individual.
Right.
Not the actual game. So this is where the balancing act needs to happen to say, right, what can we do as players to bargain with Rugby Australia to promote the game?
Mm.
So, and there's always these legal clauses that we need to be concerned about.
Yeah.
Because ultimately that's, as you said, we do have the responsibility, but we don't get exposed to it because we're protected legally.
Right.
So, I mean, we could always choose out of our own will to go and support a club.
Sure. Yep. Right. Absolutely. Yep.
That's fine. I mean, I think Drew Mitchell and Matt Giteau sort of took it a bit extremely.
Yeah, as you do.
I mean, hey, but look at that. They got Shabal. Took eyes
on it, right?
Yeah, and they got Shabal over, right? Yeah.
Absolutely. And the eyes that brought back on Subby's footy. Again, correct. And look, we have six divisions of Subby's rugby that no one talks about that is looked at as a piss up. It's looked at as even first grade Kentwell Cup, good footy. Like, you know, we got Harrison Orr, who's come from overseas and comes back in. You're getting all these overseas players looking at it saying, well, I could play shoots. Charlie Gamble's a great example.
Mm-hmm.
Played for Petersham. Then went to Easts and played for the Tars. These Shoot Shield is a bloody good brand of footy. Subbies is a great, if anything, it should be used as a development tool to get you to Shoot Shield, to then get you to state level or national level or whatever it is, right? Why do you think there is that perception of Subbies being a piss up when it's just really just your local club?
I think the question you should be asking, Nick, is why do they play Subbies?
I play for the love of the game.
So why don't they play that at Shoot Shield?
Well, I think people at Shoot Shield, well, they obviously still love the game. They obviously want to be there. They pay their subs, exorbitant amount of subs, I might add, to be there. And obviously in that competition, there's four grades. So not everyone can obviously make first grade or second grade. But even then, first grade and second grade is separate most times from third grade and fourth grade. You go to a local suburban club, everyone trains together for the most part. Everyone kind of interacts with each other. There's a lot of these clubs that have the top squad and have the bottom squad.
Yep.
And the top squad do top squad things, bottom squad do bottom squad things. And unless there's a clubhouse where you can just dab each other up and whatever, you're very isolated. You know, like if you're not in first or second grade, kind of don't really know you unless you're mates or something. It's sort of, you don't have that conversation in a lot of these clubs. Subbies, from my experience, totally different. You could be playing fifth grade, sixth grade subbies, right, for Mossman. And then all of a sudden you're rubbing shoulders with a first grader. Hey, we're going to have a beer, you're coming, you know?
So I think you just highlighted why people play subbies instead of Shoot Shield.
Yeah.
It's simply pure enjoyment.
Yeah.
Whereas if you go to Shoot Shield, you're actually being segregated.
Yeah. Yeah.
So,
but the argument would be, if you're a player, understand you want to play subbies for the enjoyment. But if you're, and most players are really competitive and want to make the next level, they're not really picking from suburban footy. If they did, they would have picked Charlie Gamble from Petersham.
Yeah.
If they did, they would have picked all these other people from subbies footy. Now, obviously, the exception were two Wallabies who went into a situation, which was Giddo and Mitchell. And at the time when Mitchell was playing for the Tars, he would show up in his Balmain kit, and that's cool.
Yep.
But it wasn't like he went from Balmain to Tars. He went from Tars to Balmain. Yep. So that's, and he was affiliating with that way. And we won't really see that changing. But now that we have a new CEO, new president, and they're all ex-rugby players, all ex-rugby Wallabies, do you see that trend starting to happen? Or potentially in the future they're going to trend towards more of a, I like to think when you're running a rugby organization, it should be run like a rugby club rather than a business, because it's, in from my point of view, if you're going to run a business, your main focus obviously is the product, and you want to sell it to the consumers. Don't care what they have to say. Doesn't really matter. You're not really focused on fan engagement or sponsors. All you're focused on is making a dollar. I don't necessarily care if Rugby Australia or New South Wales make a dollar. I just want to go watch rugby. Do you know what I mean? So I think they need to start running it like a rugby club and say, okay, well, if you run a rugby club, you're on a social committee, what's the most important thing? The rugby, right? And getting more eyes on rugby and all that sort of thing.
So then on the flip side, how would you get more eyes on it?
Well, that's very interesting. I guess by being part of the local community. I mean, if you're in a situation where you're running New South Wales rugby, right, you're obviously attracting sponsors. But in order to attract sponsors, you need to be in front of them. So what I would do is I would get the Michael Hoopers of the world, the Tafts of the world, the Cliffies, the established Wallabies, and you guys would be out saying, okay, well, this is who we are. We're the Waratahs. We play at, you know, Allianz, or we play here, or we play here. We're playing the Crusaders on the weekend. And you'll run into one or two guys who are rugby nuts or played rugby growing up, or, you know, who's your favorite player, or who's this, who's that. And it's just that face-to-face direct sales. When you become good in sales by establishing relationships, right?
Yeah.
That's how you become good. You can send emails. They're just going to say, oh, yeah, mate, yeah, whatever. Yeah, yeah. We'll meet you on the weekend, whatever, right? But different conversation when you say, hey, tough, mate, how you going? You going well? Yeah, sweet. How's the family? How are the kids? Blah, blah, blah. You remember that. You don't necessarily remember the 400 emails that someone sent you. You know what I mean?
So to just highlight what you said.
Yes, yes.
Rather than talk about the product, you're talking about the person's interest.
Correct.
So why are we limiting our market to just those sponsors?
Correct. Exactly.
Right?
Yeah,
no, no.
Exactly.
Exactly. You actually say valid points that, yeah, it should be run by like a rugby club.
Mm.
Though rugby clubs can be quite uneven as well.
True.
Suffice to say, it's the business model that keeps those rugby clubs on some sort of a tangent to
sure, sure.
Like be productive.
Yeah, sure, sure.
But you're right in saying, yeah, those values are what people remember. It's not like the rugby we played.
Yeah. I mean, it's great. They remember the games, but they remember the people more.
Right? I can tell you now, most of the guys that I've played against, test level, state level, they don't remember me for my rugby.
Yeah.
I mean, I couldn't throw the ball straight, let alone bloody make a tackle. They do remember the copious amounts of alcohol I drank with them.
Absolutely.
Right?
Absolutely.
Yeah. No, and you're right. It's absolutely, it's that relationship.
Yeah.
It's actually human relationship management.
Yeah, absolutely.
Right?
Absolutely.
So you got all this digital customer relationship management software.
Yeah.
I mean, I work for one. However, nothing beats that human.
Absolutely.
Relationship. So, yeah, but I think we're just limiting our
market, yeah.
No, our pool of sponsors, the people that want to be interested in.
Yeah.
So if I were to say to you, Nick, say I'm an absolute normal person.
Right.
Nothing, no idea about rugby.
Yep.
What is it that you can convey across to me to take an interest?
Take an interest in rugby.
To watch a game of rugby.
Well, I think rugby is one of these great sports where it's got something for everyone, right? Like even if we're just watching two men go at it, right? Two men's teams go at it, not obviously two men, but two men's teams go at it, and I'm bringing a female over, right? You want to see the spectacle. Obviously, it's a spectacle. It's a big event, whatever. But you would take them to a game, and what you would be pointing out would be everything we've talked about before, everything that makes rugby different. So, okay, it's interesting how these guys are absolutely killing each other. But, you know, I remember there was a time I think you were scrumming against one of the Welsh boys, I think it was, and you guys had a bit of a fist fight, both got sent off and did the old, yep, sweet, and then you both went and sat down in the bin.
Yep.
You don't find those anywhere else, right? Then I would explain to them what rugby gives them and what rugby essentially gets from people. So gets your full effort, gets that mutual respect, that admiration, whatever, and this is what you get out of it. Obviously, it's an exchange. I mean, you're playing a very physical contact sport. It's not for the faint-hearted, as they say. But you're getting mates. All of my mates are rugby mates.
Mm-hmm.
All of them. Now, I think there's like two or three who I've met at school or whatever, but all of them are rugby mates. And it's based on the fact that, cool, yeah, we played rugby together. Okay, maybe you picked me up to go traveling, to go to somewhere, or we did whatever, but it's the ultimate form of teamwork. And all these little things you point out and you try to find are, oh, yeah, so see how these guys work together, see how the ball got passed from the 10 to the winger, or, you know, these guys are coming together in a rolling maul as a team. Those are the values I would express. And then you see the mums running on with oranges, or, you know, the manager, or, you know, the fans who just randomly turn up. And or it's the whole spectacle you got to show them. You know, I would actually take them to a Subbies game first, and then would then say, okay, well, let's go to a Tars game, or let's go to a Wallabies game, because two different pictures, right? You're seeing the amateur values almost every second in a Subbies game. Yeah. And then you're seeing the spectacle of what it is times infinity, times a million.
So I think what you highlighted there was the best point about rugby is the teamwork.
Yeah.
Because everyone loves to be a part of a team.
Yeah.
Unless you're like Serena Williams or Novak Djokovic.
Yeah.
Loves individual sports.
Sure.
Thinks you're the best.
Sure.
Right? But the fact that we have this herd mentality stated within our bodies.
Yeah.
Means that belongingness.
Yeah.
Not too sure if you know Maslow's theory of needs.
Yep.
We want to be part of belonging, right?
Absolutely.
So if we can tap into that, I think that's a huge barrier to break, particularly for people that don't know what the sport is. So, you said is absolutely amazing. So well done.
Thank you. Thank you. Very quickly, because we're about to wrap up. Been an awesome conversation, mate.
Thank you
very much. IRB have credit. I definitely want your opinion on this, because you're a man who throws his body on the line with tackles, right? And I've seen plenty of times, actually, almost go against what the IRB are saying in this situation with getting the tackle range below the sternum because mm-hmm. they're afraid it might cause concussions. Now, I've seen Christian Lilifano's first test match against the Lions make a legs tackle, knocked out, right? Yeah. What a way to be a wallaby, right?
Mm.
I've seen you plenty of times, grass cut people. There's that famous one in Wales where you and Poey chopped down Shane Williams, I believe it was.
I was trying to go for a charge down.
Yeah, you were.
No, but not many people know that, right? Exactly. They thought, he's going to grass cut him, yeah. It's like psychopath.
I was just playing the game, you know. It's play on for me. But anyway, and everyone, I was like, that's a rugby play, like, get over it. But anyway.
Actually, the most prominent one most people talk about to me is the one I did on Jerry Collins.
Oh, yeah, true. Right? That's true. Yeah. But that's a big person to do it to, right?
But this is where you're alluding to concussion, right?
Yeah, correct.
I was not thinking about concussion before I was tackling Jerry Collins because I know I'm going to end up second best here.
Yeah, exactly. Well, it's just interesting because in rugby, even in a situation, let's say you and I on the opposition, you're on the goal line, I'm trying to do a pick and drive, right? You're not going to be able to literally tackle at the legs. It's not going to be the first point of contact because I'm leading with my head down anyway to try to point the ball down. So the idea is if you then try to make a tackle to hold up the ball, is that a yellow card? Because you haven't actually made contact below the sternum in that situation. And my sole issue with this one thing is if you take that out, then you're going to have to start legislating anything that's above here in every aspect. So scrums become totally different. Rolling walls become totally different.
Yeah.
How we clean out people become totally different. Mm-hmm. Even if someone's on the ball like David Pocock, who now can no longer come at them and break the glass. We have to teach kids new ways to do things because if you break the glass, you might hit him in the head.
Yeah.
So, and you looked at it in the World Cup. As much as the World Cup was fantastic to watch, it was very stop-start because someone would graze someone on the nose and it's a yellow card. I would like it to say, look, here's an idea and it's up to the refs. What's the word I'm looking for? Up to the refs.
Adjudication.
Yes. Thank you. For them to say, okay, look, it was a rugby play, like he didn't, you know, it wasn't a feared income. It wasn't trying to obviously like shoulder charge you in the face or anything. And the first example is, you know, look at someone like even Esabeth. If he's trying to tackle Aaron Smith, like, I mean, and that's a realistic possibility in rugby, right?
Exactly.
Like maybe he breaks through the contact, breaks through the ruck, goes straight through the middle. Mm-hmm. He's right there.
Yep.
So he's now 6'10", 6'11", has to get down to a 5'5", 5'6" person, and then so he's already come down, and by the time he's down there he'll then get a yellow card because he can't get down any further to then tackle a guy who's smaller.
Correct.
So what's your thoughts, opinions on this new? I understand why they're doing it, of course, and it's great for them, especially at a junior level. Got giant Polynesians running out, these little skinny white men.
Yeah.
It's really funny how evolution's worked. And that's happened, and you know. But again, I think the onus is on the coaching. I think the onus is, hey, you look in, you need to put your head in the right position. If you don't, you're going to get hurt.
Mm.
But at the same time, it's a collision sport, you know?
Absolutely.
So what's your thoughts on that?
No, it's a great debate to discuss simply because we've got so many variables coming into the play.
Mm.
For example, physics, pure and simple.
Yeah.
Right? Big Eben Etzebeth
versus
Aaron Smith, as you highlighted. Unfair advantage. So, I mean, Isaac Newton's laws come into play straight away.
Yeah.
So, take you back to the final of South Africa, New Zealand.
Yeah.
The red card Sam Kane got.
Yep.
Right? Now, I understand the laws of rugby.
Yep.
But at some point, the laws of physics have to come into play. To say that Jesse Krill is at a standing start.
Yep.
There's no way neither he or Sam Kane can produce that much force to consider damage.
Yeah, exactly.
Now look at it on the flip side where Sia Khaleesi just got away with a yellow card. Now he's coming from a higher velocity.
Yeah, I know.
Right?
Yep, it's crazy.
It makes a simple glance of the head. Now, any physicist can tell you with the no, but like it's laws of motion.
It's crazy to even, because there are so many points in any game that you could point out and you would say, well, if that was a yellow, then why wasn't that one?
Correct.
Or if that was a red, why did they get a yellow? Oh, yeah. Well, because he dipped. Or I think there was one in the World Cup where I think it was might have been one of the lower tier nations where someone was running across and he was just sort of stepping people as he was coming across, and he put his hand out, and he hit him in the head, but it wasn't like a
correct
anything, and he got a, I think he got a red card for it.
Yeah,
and then a similar occasion happened where old mate ducked in the same game, like 10 minutes later, would just carry nice and low, and old mate was trying to like wrap him up, ball and all tackle. I think his head actually hit his shoulder.
Correct.
Yeah, and he got actually, because he's dipped, it doesn't really matter. Mm-hmm. Well, I'm confused. I know a lot of ins and outs in rugby, and I'm confused.
Like, exactly.
It's just like, what? So imagine the players. They're going,
yeah,
hang on, what's going on here?
And all the players are going to have their own opinion.
Sure, absolutely. Yeah.
So do the referees.
Yeah.
Unfortunately, referees can make or break a game.
Exactly.
I'm just glad it didn't for the World Cup final.
Yeah.
I understand that.
The Kiwis would argue against that. They'd say
I would argue against it too, simply because of the laws of physics, not necessarily the laws of rugby.
Yeah, exactly.
I understand, like, yes, there's head contact, no mitigation.
Yeah.
Right? Well, so was the same instance, yet you had someone coming at a higher velocity. Where's the consideration of that?
Exactly. Yeah, I agree.
Because I can tell you from my experience that the reason why I'd run up quick was to, one, limit their space to move, but two, get my target as close as possible so I don't get a head injury.
Yeah.
So as you highlighted, coaching does come into it as well.
Yeah. And it's the danger. The only argument I am strongly against is if you tackle low, it reduces the risk of danger.
Yeah.
Like you put your head on someone's hip or someone's knee.
Correct.
Or, I mean, you're going to end up with this. And I think it's actually more dangerous. Excuse me. I think it's more dangerous for the tackler than it is anything else. I understand you want to protect the ball carrier. Maybe it's a little bit more appealing. Mm-hmm. Ball carriers breaking the line and stuff like that. But you are putting the tackler at a greater risk of making a play. Even this, like, how often will we see that Simon Karevi play a couple of years back where he ran up at that Welsh guy and he was trying to put his bumper up?
Correct.
And he just got caught on the chest and then somehow it went to his face.
Yep.
Don't even get me started on that. But, I mean, it's that if that happened in a game tomorrow and someone had tackled sternum height, the guy who tackled on sternum height would get carded, not the ball carrier.
And do we have to run the ball with our sternums exposed?
What?
can you imagine, like, running like that? Yeah, hit me in the sternum. Yeah,
I know. And as a coach, you're going to try to bait them into doing stuff like that, right? Mm. So that's where this argument comes into play. But look, tough, bro. Thank you very much for jumping on the podcast, mate. It's been an awesome chat. Hopefully we can do this again soon because I had an awesome chat with you, mate.
I'm sure you'll find plenty of guests that will have similar opinions.
I'm sure. None as probably as big or as good looking as you, mate. But we'll try.
You're making up for an hour and a half ago, are you?
I'm trying. I'm trying.
Nah, all good. But thanks for having me. And hopefully this can get you back to exposing the game that we both love.
Absolutely, mate. Yeah, that's the mission, is to get rugby back to just walking down the street and someone say, hey, how good was that test match yesterday? Yeah. Or how good was footy yesterday? You know what I mean? Is there anything you want to promote, mate? Any working ons or books or, you know, memoirs or statues being built or any, you know?
No, not really. If anything, it's great to see you back on the rugby journey and I'll be sure to reach out to my friends to get a listen to it.
Awesome, mate. Appreciate it, buddy.
All right.
Thank you very much for having
Thanks.
Jumping on. Thanks, bro.
Good stuff, guys.
Cheers.